All right, Tedeschi Trucks Band on WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And it's Radiology, Max and Nolan.
Yeah. It's a weird week.
It is a funny week.
I don't know if funny is the right word.
I think it's pretty weird. I mean, if you don't have your finger on the pulse of Tufts campus, it's a very changed place, as one would expect after the results of Tuesday night.
Definitely. There have been a lot of... yesterday, almost all classes, I'd say, were optional. A lot of them were canceled altogether.
That wasn't necessarily my experience, but it certainly affected. I know homework assignments were pushed around. I know a number of classes didn't make any mention of it, just proceeded as...
Not necessarily,
but professors were definitely quieter on campus, and there's definitely a sort of like being in a black and white movie. Moods are definitely kind of somber around here, to be expected, I think.
Yeah, it's quite a time. We'll just have to see what happens over the next couple of weeks.
But at the same time, I think... even though the election is come and gone, I think the dialogue is just sort of getting started, right? At least on campus, there's a number of people having discussions, but the irony being that really the discussions we have here are not, you know, it's not the people here that need to start agreeing on things. It's people on a much broader scope across the country that need
right.
to...
Right, yeah, if you look at the... there are two pieces of data from the election that I find really inspiring, which are, if you look at the Massachusetts polls, not a single county went towards Trump. Not a single county in Massachusetts, which is the only state, I think I'm saying this right.
Yeah,
that was totally blue.
Yeah, and that's inspiring?
It is to me. I don't know. It depends on your political views, but also that if you've seen, it's been bouncing around online on Facebook. People have been telling each other. People between the ages of 18 to 25, their votes. If you look at the map of how they voted, it's pretty unified, which is inspiring looking forward into the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. That makes sense to me. And I think naturally you sort of have more conservative ideals changing as you know, voters get younger and that sort of thing.
Right. And as you look at the conflict in decisions and ideas and opinions of the people that did vote in this election, the idea that the youngest generation that was voting is unified in their thought. That in itself to me says, okay, with time, these are the people that are going to help unify the country.
Right. That's the hope. But that being said, you know, the younger the voters, generally younger voters have less of a turnout. So if people are going out to vote, chances are they're politically active youth tend to be, you know, people that are going to vote liberal.
That's possible. Although, really, I don't know any of the data for who did go out to vote in this election. But it's my idea that this was such a divisive election that young people, even if they weren't politically active, would go out to vote anyway to voice an opinion. And if I think about the politically active people that I know who went out to vote, a lot of them were uninspired with this election because none of their candidates were shown. And yet they still went out to vote. And then when you look at that map, I guess a lot of people I know, or not a lot of people, but several people I know who are politically minded and who are more along the political thoughts that I hold, voted third party.
Yeah.
Which, depending on how you feel about it, I don't think that's what caused the sway in this election.
There are hundreds
of reasons why.
Yeah, and I think the idea of discouraging people from trying to elect a third party is, you know, it sort of weakens our democracy. I think, you know, by nature of choice, people should be allowed to vote for a third party if they want to.
Right.
I don't like the vitriol against people like that. But And well, what's interesting, I think, too, is indecision was obviously a part of the election. It was so polarizing, but and like you said, I think a lot of people disliked both candidates. Understandably, I think, you know, Hillary sort of had that image of a career politician, and I think people didn't like that. Donald Trump has a number of things that were, you know, very polarizing about him. But I think what was interesting was, if you look at the numbers, I think in general, I think it was a Washington Post article that said among people that had negative feelings about both candidates, I think they turned out 2-1 for Trump over Hillary.
Wow.
And I think it just represents a desire for change, right? They, if nothing else, I think he stood for sort of something that was against the establishment, that in a way Bernie Sanders stood for too.
Well, in my mind, there are two. I would never compare Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump, because as much as he's Donald Trump, president-elect, says that he's really for change, there are types of change that I think are beneficial to the people and types that are not. And I think the idea of change in general as a concept is not a helpful one, because it masks what people are actually trying to get done.
But I think they were, in a way, very similar candidates, obviously with very different ideas, but the idea of sort of going against the system and, you know, going against the, even though Bernie was a career politician, he was very anti-establishment. I think, in a way, they were similar in that way. I can't imagine that many Bernie supporters decided to vote for Trump over Hillary, but I think that was sort of the first sign of the undercurrent, that people were tired of the establishment and the political establishment, and obviously that's what we saw on Tuesday.
Also, this happened again, which has happened now a number of times in American elections, that the candidate who won the popular vote did not win the election.
Oh, yeah. When was the last time, 2000, that would have happened?
2000, right? Yeah, with Gore.
Yeah. But it was still, what was the margin? By, you know, less than a, you know, might have been a tenth of a percent or something?
I think it was, of the people who voted, Hillary won the popular vote by around 200,000.
Right, votes. Which is, you know, a tiny percentage, less than a percent.
It's less than a percent, but it is a fair number of people. And that I also find inspiring, because as far as ideology goes, I think it's despicable and dangerous, the person that we elected.
But even if Hillary had won, or if we took the, you know, if we went on a system purely by popular vote and Hillary won with these kinds of margins, I think that there would still be huge reason for concern, or at least need for dialogue, because the country is incredibly divided, right?
Definitely.
Regardless of the, I think people are sad right now, at least on liberal, you know, university campuses, because of the outcome. But even if we abstract away who actually won the election, if you just look at the numbers, you know, say it was a poll, it shows an incredible divide between the country. And I think what's really fascinating is just seeing the number of people that are so shocked, you know, just did not see it coming from anywhere. And it just speaks to the fact that I think, especially on a university campus, we live in a liberal bubble with a lot of kids from liberal states, and I fly home to one when I go home. And the majority of university professors are far left or left. There's very few conservative professors. And I think people are making the argument that it's, in a way, a failure of the university system that generated this disconnect.
I think another way to look at that also, though, is, and I want to try and say this in the right way without it coming across in a way I don't intend, but if you look at the polls about people who are educated and how they voted versus people who, or what level of education you have and how you vote, to me that speaks that on some level, and this is not dismissive of anyone's viewpoint, but I think we do need a better education system in this country. because that in itself is telling, that education is a line of divide for how people voted.
Mm-hmm. But that's always been the case, right? The greater education, people vote more liberal. It tends to be it. Whether that's because education does that or because our education system does that, I think it's a combination of both. Like I said, I think being in such a liberal environment, the things that I would view as extremely liberal on a Tufts campus in the eyes of, you know, a common American would be absolutely absurd, you know? Because our scale is just, my metric is already pushed so far left just as a student on campus. So there's definitely a disconnect, and I that's obvious. I don't need to say that, but in terms of starting to repair it, yeah, education system would definitely be a way to do it, and improving the accessibility of a university education obviously would make sense. But, you know, not everybody wants to go to college, what, 6 out of 10 Americans don't, so, you know, I'm not sure what the way to address that is, but I don't think this is something that happened overnight. That's what is so interesting to me about the shock, is if America changed overnight. But no, these, you know, supporters always existed. And I think it took the right candidate to mobilize them. But that was what happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just hope over the next couple of weeks is, I know there are a lot of demonstrations and marches and rallies that are happening, which I also find inspiring, because people are really getting involved in the political process at a grassroots, as well as trying to make it on a wider level. I just hope people stay safe.
Yeah, well, it's worrying too, right? People are calling into question the legitimacy of our democratic system, right? We had a fair election. There's no indication that there was anything messed with, right? It seemed to be totally fair, and America elected a candidate. People aren't happy about it, and they're basically saying they're disenfranchised with our process, right?
Right, which also, yeah, it's a scary thought for our democracy, but also I don't think it's absurd, and I think it's actually good if people start to question, is there a better way to do this? I think that is a really helpful thing to have out in the open, to say, let's actually talk, let's think about this, are there alternatives that we could do, because if you look at the two candidates that we had that were the only two viable candidates, according to the two major parties, their disapproval ratings were some of the highest out of candidates in history. And that seems ridiculous to me, that those were the only two choices, that they had such high disapproval ratings. And I think there has to be a way, whether it's within our current system, whether it requires minor changes to the system, or whether it's almost a complete overhaul, that there has to be a better way.
What do you mean by better way?
For whether it starts in the primaries, whether we break away from a two-party system and into a more major system, how we address the Electoral College.
It wasn't like the primaries came out of nowhere. People elected Clinton as to lead the Democratic ticket, and Trump to lead the Republican.
It's true, but also within those, as has been said, that the Democratic establishment at the time of the primaries was very much weighted towards Hillary Clinton, which is totally their right to do, because within a party, they have no obligation to treat their candidates fairly. Whereas with a presidential election, once you have the two nominees, or however many it is from all the parties, there is an obligation to treat candidates fairly, whatever that means. And the fact that so many young Democrats, especially, I would say, or young liberals, however you'd like to say it, were very much opposed to their party's nomination, and that their candidate, if they supported Bernie Sanders, was not treated fairly within that system, says that within parties, maybe there will be monumental change. I hope so. I hope there's a way that we can look at this objectively and say, how can we get more people's voices heard? Because at the bottom line, for me, the disapproval ratings of our two candidates were ridiculous and totally, it did not have to happen that way.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the field, if we're just talking about the Democratic side, and you look at Bernie versus Hillary, Bernie just didn't stand a chance. Obviously, he had a considerable following, especially amongst very vocal liberals, but his policies were just so extreme. Realistically, unless there is an overwhelming change in the country towards his ideals, there was no way that I can't see a way that he could have actually managed to get onto the ticket.
That's also, though, what people said about Trump.
Yeah, I agree. But I think Trump speaks to a broader demographic, is what we found out, right, than Bernie.
Right, but we had no notion of that before. Even up till a week ago, it was still pretty much a joke.
Well, we voted, right? We voted, and voters turned out for Trump, and voters turned out for Hillary. So I would disagree, right? That's how they got onto the tickets, was because there was a public election, the government polled the populace, and those were the two candidates that they chose.
Well, you say that those are the two candidates that the people chose, and in my mind, on some level, they chose the president. The people chose the president, but the two candidates were partially chosen by the parties, which do not necessarily reflect the will of the people, because depending on where you live, what state, what county, if you are, say, an independent, you may never vote for a candidate for one of the parties. You could have no choice except between two people in our system.
Right, but that's your choice to not register as a Democrat or a Republican, or pre-register as, a Democrat or Republican when it comes time.
But granted, if you go back to the Founding Fathers and their ideals of people have been bringing it up a lot, and it's been brought up over the past 10 years even, that they did not want a party system that was conflicted in this way, because they saw people as individuals who did not have to stay within a party to vote their conscience and to vote what they believed would be best for the country. And as such, I think I strongly believe that people should not be required to register for a party in order to have a choice at the preliminary stages of who becomes president.
Well, you're given time to decide, right? You look at the candidates, you decide which candidate you support, and then you'd register for that party so that you can cast your ballot, right? Isn't that...
It is, but in practice, it doesn't work out that way. Like, that's the ideal of the situation, but it's not what happens.
That
is
the process, right?
It is the process, but I think there should be discussion of an alternative.
To
that, how it currently works. Because if this election really says anything, it's that we're not talking to each other as an American public. We don't understand what other people think based on either geography, views, viewpoints, where you grew up, what your education level is, any of these factors. We truly don't understand each other.
Absolutely.
And with that moving forward, I think the only way to bridge that gap is on a small scale that can happen on a large scale. It has to be personal connections that people make with other people, and the parties, as they're set up, don't allow that, because it's a self-replicating loop that these parties now have major news networks that are devoted almost entirely to that one party and to expressing that viewpoint, which has changed in the past, 20 years, when media and news organizations were supposedly objective. But now with subjective news stations, you don't have access to other viewpoints, which is unbelievably dangerous. And I think it all came to a head in this election, that pretty much all of the major news networks were predicting, and all the pollsters were predicting, a huge sway in the other direction.
So you think that the communication between sort of the divided sides of America starts with the media?
I think that's a factor in it. I wouldn't say that's where it starts. I think, honestly, for me, where it starts is the fact that we have two parties that say to represent their members, but in actuality, when you only have two choices, you just have to go with whichever one better represents. And on some level, that's not good enough.
Well, but there's huge variation, right? You can say that we're putting candidates into two boxes, but Bernie and Hillary were vastly different candidates, just as Trump is a vastly different candidate from the majority of the Republican Party, right?
That's true. And ideally, in my mind, there should have been someone down the middle of the road between Bernie and between Hillary.
Exactly.
And there
wasn't.
That's
what they needed.
That's what they needed.
And I think that was a failure of the party, just as I think it was a failure of the Republican Party to put
forth. But also, as the party, the people who ran it, Hillary was their ideal candidate. So that organization does not necessarily have to reflect their members, because the leaders of the organization, who have decidedly more voting power.
Why are you saying she was their ideal candidate?
Because she's been a member of that party. And if you, it's hard to explain without having data in front of me. But I think if you go through news reports and if you go through what happened during the primaries between Hillary and Bernie, it was organized in such a way where she had more media attention.
But do you think that's the party, or do you think that's the media? Because I think the media obviously played a huge role in the election. And I mean, frankly, without the media, we would not have had a Trump presidency. I think that can be said pretty frankly. I just said frankly twice. But if you look at just the coverage starting in the primaries, obviously, I think there's a conflict of interest. We don't elect our media, obviously. We choose who to patronize based on how good they are. But in general, their number one interest is to generate readership or viewership and money, their businesses. And Trump unquestionably generated both of those things. He was a controversial candidate and people wanted to watch what happened. So they covered him. And I think in a way lended legitimacy to what was sort of a joke of a campaign initially. And that didn't really change over the course of the entire election cycle. And I think that's an interesting problem to have to consider. We're not a country that censors our media. I don't think we should be.
But what are the incentives for media?
Exactly. And it's business. It makes sense, right? But then what role should the media play morally?
Right.
Do they have an obligation to be unbiased? I mean, at this point, it seems like they don't. Because people are choosing to watch news stations that are decidedly biased towards one side or the other. But that being said, even something that is relatively liberal, like CNN, definitely leveraged coverage of Trump quite a bit just because he was entertaining. And viewership was, you know, tripled. And I think they're all going to be feeling a big drop after the election cycle. But I think the other issue is just the length of the election cycle too, right?
It's too long.
I think that's something a lot of people have said. You look at a lot of other countries where you might have an election cycle that lasts maybe for 6 weeks of campaigning, something like that. And I think that only adds to the divide in the country, in that when you have so much time to think about a candidate, especially when it's so polarized already between the candidates that we had, you just have all this time to sort of start to watch media that has to do with your candidate and back up your theories. And I think you just have a year to become more divided versus...
Right, and skepticism gets lost in the overwhelming amount of information that you can supposedly watch.
Right, and we saw through interviews with a number of voters that a lot of times, once people had made up their minds, they said they stopped watching media because they didn't trust it, something right. like that, which is absurd. But that
it's a viable viewpoint that they have because they right. did it, and that's how the world works. If someone believes in something the way they believe in it, they're going to do that.
Right. Yeah. But to play the devil's advocate to say that it is absurd, is an argument that the media is a wise way to inform yourself. And, you know, obviously you have to follow it somehow, but you do have to be careful. And I think not everybody is. And I think it's very easy to fall into a trap where
definitely,
your
especially now
is
with the
biased.
Internet, where your search results are actually catered to your opinions. all of the time. And I've found that when I use a computer that is not my own to search any political question, it provides me with much better answers. And I think that that potentially, in my mind, shows some of the divide between young voters and older voters, just in terms of media competency and how you can navigate these new forms of communication and getting access to information. That old access to information, television networks, radio, it's all become a lot more biased in recent years. And so has the internet, but there are ways around it on the internet if you know how to use it. And that's where I'm sort of inspired, that I think with people who are capable of informing themselves and looking critically at a multitude of information that is biased and pulling out aspects of it, those, to some extent, in my thoughts, those are the young people. One last thing I'd like to say about the election, about the Electoral College and campaigning, is that we do have this almost a year, or even over a year, of campaigning for this election, and most of the campaigning only matters in a couple of states, and even within those states in a couple of counties. And that's probably my biggest argument against the Electoral College, because as a voter in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, wherever I chose to vote, my vote for the president did not matter.
Yeah, I think that's true. And frankly, you look at why the Electoral College was created. I think in general, it was a logistical problem of just saying we can't actually count all these votes, so we need a representative system where we can bring the number of people down to a smaller number of representatives so that we can, you know, effectively decide without actually having to count this number of pieces of paper, which has changed now. Obviously, we have the means to do that, and we can get a political number based on the popular vote. But I have a lot more to talk about, and I think we'll continue, but maybe take a quick break, play some music. Again, you're listening to Radiology, an interesting political episode, taking advantage of the current climate and current events. So with that, I think we have
here's a great political song by folk artist Will Varley.
There's a spider making his web in his house. John Harris is a free man now. There's a spider catching a fly in his house. John Harris is a free man now. Where the concept of freedom is a PR campaign designed to keep us working for our wage. Then we're locked up, shocked up, praying, sleeping slaves till we die without ever seeing the bowls and the chains. Why the governments are free to occupy and invade, to fight over land and try to control the waves. We come in peace, they say, we're fighting in God's name. Then they rape and they pillage just like Alexander the Great. Back home on the television, they're all just ringing bells. Distraction for the masses to keep us all in our shells. Don't sing about politics, boy, 'cause it doesn't sell. Now take these pieces of paper and go to hell. Where the man at the station, he told me, work hard, son. Work hard all your life and you're bound to be a real man. He was broken, his eyes were dead, he could hardly stand. It's funny that his master never seemed to lift his own hand. My father said I'm paranoid, calls this a conspiracy. Don't think like that, boy, you're bound to go crazy. He got so many chains wrapped around his eyes that he cannot see. And he'd rather be blind than to realize he's never been free. There's a spider making his web in his house. There's no such thing as a free man now. There's a spider catching his fly in this house. There's no such thing as a free man now.
Mr. Joe.
window and you say, is this where it is? Somebody points his finger at you and says it's his. And you say, what's mine? Someone else says, well, what is? You say, oh my God, am I here all alone? Your ticket to go see the geek who walks up to you when he hears you speak and says, how does it feel to be such a freak? And you say, impossible, and he hands you a coat. And then he clicks his high heels and without further notice asks you how it feels and says, here's your throat back, thanks for the Lord. You put your eyes in your pocket and you put your nose into the ground. There ought to be a law against you coming around. You got to be made to be wearing a telephone. But something's happening and you don't know what it is. There you missed that
Bob Dylan, Ballad of a Thin Man, live remastered from Budokan.
Nice. Again, you're listening to Radiology on WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio, and we are talking about Tuesday night and what happened. Left a big impact on this campus, certainly, and has left much of the campus very changed and somber, I think, shocked by the results. And we're talking about the reasons for that shock and the disconnect that resulted in it, I think. We've in the first half of the show spoke about the role of the media and started to talk about what its rights are to extend its commercial interests and whether it has an obligation to act morally or just commercially. And I think it's, you know, in our capitalistic system, that's it's their commercial interests are paramount. But obviously they exerted an impressive amount of control over the election. I think it's not I think it's very arguably true that Trump's campaign would not have been what it was had the media not covered it to the degree that they did, but
I think it also pulls in all of the research that's been done over the past 50 years about advertisements. That even when you're watching an advertisement on television and you know it's an advertisement, it still works. And that's what the data shows. It still works. And I think that's really, we'd never thought about it in terms of the election before.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference.
Yeah. No, it certainly does. And I think that was an interesting weakness by the Clinton campaign, I would say. They definitely ran a lot of ads. Trump's campaign, I did not see quite as many from. But I think Clinton might have been equally as shocked by this as we were. Because you look at her ads, and generally they were appealing to educated or minority populations. You didn't really see too many ads that were for the working man. You know, essentially the voting body that elected Donald Trump.
And there were swing states that she didn't really campaign in.
Right.
That proved, not proved, but were very important in this election for Donald Trump.
Yeah. So I think in a way it shows the size of the fracture in the country, and that I can't imagine what she's feeling like, but that she has to have been shocked by the results just as many of us were. But again, being shocked about something that's probably been a fact in our country for years and has been ignored by much of the liberal side for just as long. So I think especially we've been talking about the campus or the climate on campus and the fact that university campuses by and large are incredibly liberal places, liberal bubbles where liberal ideas are expressed and safe. But I think the counter to that is we have seen quite a lot of what would basically be equivalent to the sort of hatred that a lot of people accuse Trump supporters of, spouting in response to conservative ideals on campus.
Well, I don't think I would go that far, because in my mind, on campus, I have not seen any instances of violence.
I'll agree. I don't think there was any physical violence, but in terms of what would probably qualify as what could be hate speech or at least incredibly questionable actions against some, standard human rights, I think, or at least rights assured by the government. I would say I remember freshman year having Scalia come to campus, and immediately people were calling for the university to not allow him to come speak on campus and trying to silence him, which was, as a freshman, not knowing Tufts quite as well, was shocking to me in the sense that people weren't willing to allow a dialogue with a conservative on campus.
Well, again, and I think we have differing views on this. I see it less as not trying to allow a conversation and more about protesting bringing Scalia on campus to express his views. He was less interested. He was not interested in having a discussion with people. He was there to present his views that I would agree have been harmful to people on campus.
But does that mean that people that would like to hear him express his view shouldn't have a right to do so on campus? I mean, isn't that the whole
point? I think what it means is that people have a right to call on the administration to not bring him in.
They have a right to, but is exercising that right questionable?
I don't think so.
Argument would be so. They're trying to silence somebody on campus and avoid people from hearing the things that he has to say. And that's sort of fundamentally wrong.
But again, they weren't trying to silence him.
They were trying to prevent people on Tufts campus from having an easy way to hear what he had to say.
I think there's a small distinction that I find very important. They were trying to get the Tufts administration to not bring him in, which is different than preventing people from hearing him.
But still, the argument is that they did not want Tufts to encourage bringing a conservative speaker to campus.
That conservative speaker.
Yeah.
Which I think is an okay opinion to have, especially because they tried to do that through the right channels. Which but, is through protest and through the Tufts administration.
Yeah. I would just argue that I think it weakens the... I think it only strengthens, I should say, the liberal bubble that our campus exists in when we close ourselves off from conservative discourse, or at least discourse that doesn't match our liberal ideals.
I wouldn't disagree with you there, but I do think that people have a right to protest and to have their opinions be heard. And in that case, it never went beyond expressing their opinions.
Absolutely. And I would never argue that people do not have a right to protest, but I do question their motives in protesting. I think they went through
thing for
correct
me, though,
channels.
In the comparison that I think you were drawing between our mostly liberal campus and people raising their opinions in that way and more conservative areas of the country, is that people have acted on in more conservative areas of the country and as well probably in liberal areas of the country on issues like this. They have acted in terms of violence and in terms of actual things that are harmful and not through the right channels of bringing their opinions to voice. And
but
that's what I find really scary, especially with the type of president-elect Donald Trump's rhetoric, that he actually encourages those things.
Yeah, but I think he's a naturally populist candidate. He's going to say what you know people want to hear, and if his numbers go up, then he's going to say it. So, I'm not going to try to defend what he says because it could change, you know, depending on what his approval ratings are. So I think what is important to note, obviously, those supporters that were acting in violence, by and large, I imagine, were not quite as well educated, but more importantly, I don't think had as accessible channels as, you know, going up the street to the Tufts administration and saying, we don't like what you're doing, we're going to protest. I don't think it's quite as easy for somebody to see, you know, action in response to their voice being heard in that case. Again,
but
it's
now
totally
that their
extreme
voice,
example,
now that
and
their
it's bizarre
voice
that they were doing
heard.
That. And I still think a lot of the shock we felt comes down to the fact that we're not exposed to other sides of the political spectrum. And I think that that action with Scalia was something that was arguing in favor of continuing to carry out that preservation of the liberal bubble on campus. I understand why people don't like him, but to say that we shouldn't allow him to be on campus to speak, I think weakens that. Regardless, I know you have different opinions about it. I just think that his presence on campus as a conservative broadened the spectrum of views that we hear here.
Again, just one point about that is the key distinction for me, is that that protest, in specific that you brought up, there was no violence. There was no threat to people.
But no, we're not arguing about the right of people to protest. I think they protested well and followed the rules, and I would never take away their right to do so. But I would try to appeal to them and say that perhaps their motives were not in the best interest of the university. And I think you can say that about a number of college protests. Again, even if you play by the rules, I don't take issue with it. But if you're narrowing the dialogue on campus, which we've just said is narrow, because of, clearly, if we're so shocked by these election results, there's some sort of disconnect, then I think that you're working against trying to solve the problem. Obviously, that was a very different time, and people didn't realize the way things are now, but hopefully this is sort of a slap in the face that says you're totally unaware of the way much of the country is and thinks, and trying to avoid hearing those ideas is only going to perpetuate the problem. But I think, you know, the other interesting issue was, I don't know if you made it into the campus center here where we were watching the election, it was packed, but I think there was at least one student. Obviously, you know, again, very liberal. Everybody would clap when Hillary's votes came in and would boo when Trump's did. But we saw that there was one student at least that was wearing a Trump hat. And, you know, I'm sure was doing it to stir up controversy. but he was within his rights to do it. But the things people were saying to him were totally unacceptable. I mean, things that would totally qualify as hate speech, just because he was wearing a hat that was not popular on campus. And I think it's a frightening turn that, you know, shows people using flagrant language and treating somebody poorly after they effectively argue that that's what their candidate is working against.
Again, I don't know the context of when that happened and those sorts of things, but I have seen issues of that come up across campus. And the scary thing for me is that Donald Trump running for president when he was campaigning and the things that he was expressing are legitimate threats to people in this country. And I don't know if we've had a candidate in the past 30 years that has posed such a legitimate threat to actual people in the country. And that, to me, it doesn't excuse, but it does help understand how people can be so angry that he is our president-elect.
I agree. But I think at the same time, you know, we're lending legitimacy to the things that he says. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. My assumption is that as a populist candidate, he's ultimately going to turn out to be milder than he speaks. But I think it's, you know, it's driven by what people want him to say. I think he'll say it. And now
right.
that he...
And the fear is that
no
if he
longer,
stays true to what he said, or even if he goes farther. Because we have no scale. We have no way of knowing.
Yeah, but we do have a legal system that will implicate somebody if they go too far to one side, because eventually, and it's not too much further than what some of the things he said would imply, it becomes criminal, right? So,
right.
But we'll see. I think, yeah, like I said, people are just sort of shocked. I know one person was telling me the other day that, you know, we'd made so much progress on liberal issues, be it gay marriage, or, you know, just the country was progressing rapidly in a way on moral issues generally towards progress, and that really, I think people figured that was a signal that the country was changing. But in my mind, I think especially with issues like that where you can't really, you know, justify with numbers to somebody why one way is right, you know, it really appeals to somebody's sense of morality. I imagine if you're a conservative voter that doesn't believe in that and you see, you know, see those changes, it only polarizes you further, right?
Right.
Because I can't imagine, especially if you're a middle-aged conservative voter that believes in certain things, especially if they're moral issues, you're not going to change your mind, you know, like the flip of a switch. And arguably, my assumption is a lot of those assumptions are deep-rooted things that aren't going to change. So when you see the, you know, the liberal country moving towards liberalization, you're going to be upset by that.
Definitely. And it's crazy because in my mind, for a lot of these laws that have now been passed and things updated, it's all been an update of archaic laws that don't make sense in our society. And I'd never really seen that many other people who are so vocal about these moral issues in a way that I'm personally very opposed to.
Yeah, I agree. Interesting time. And we've blown through our hour pretty quickly.
You're listening to Radiology on WMFO in Medford.
Indeed you are. Thank you for tuning in, listening to us pulling out the old WMFO soapbox and talking about the election. We'll see what the climate is like next week. If it's still pretty vocal, I'd be happy to discuss this more. But I think everybody certainly is getting tired of the election coverage. And it's not the worst thing that we'll be able to take a little bit of a break from it before things ramp up again with the inauguration in January. Anyways, I have Young the Giant new music to round out the show. Again, Radiology on WMFO. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll be back next week.
And so I've arrived with gold in my eyes. was something.